Pack your bags. It's time to visit Las Vegas, America's capital for fun and entertainment. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
And welcome to the show. I'm Stephen Maggi. In this hour, we're going to talk about what's happened in downtown Las Vegas. You know, for a while, it was considered almost kind of a dumpy place, a place that you went for some history, but other than that, you didn't spend a lot of time there. Everybody was spending time on the Strip. But thanks to an organization that brought together some of the movers and shakers from downtown, some of the people with some of the hotels that have changed and restaurants and so forth, under the heading Fremont Street Experience. And you got to go down there. They have this incredible canopy, which we're going to talk about a little bit, that does a light show that you'll never forget and so forth. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And who I'm going to talk to, you're going to remember, Scott Robin, who's our Vegas insider. But his day job includes helping the Fremont Street Experience market their efforts. So in this particular session, we're just going to talk to him about what's going on Fremont Street in downtown Las Vegas.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire.
With us is Scott Robin. He's the interactive marketing manager of the Fremont Street Experience. And Scott, first of all, let's just tell some people, if they haven't been here, what exactly is the Fremont Street Experience? But I guess the key word on that is experience.
A lot of people say it is the most memorable part of their Las Vegas visit. We tend to agree that's what it is and that's what it should be. Fremont Street Experience is really kind of the on the technical side, it's a kind of the marketing umbrella for a number of these casinos downtown. But what it is to folks that visit is the bulk of it is the giant Viva Vision screen. It's five blocks long. Every night it's a light show every hour. Fremont Street Experience, though, is also live bands. We have three stages, and it is full of free live entertainment 365 days a year. The only night that we have a ticket to get in is on New Year's Eve, but every other night of the year it is absolutely free to come see these live bands. We have a lot of really talented folks playing on these stages. It really is just one giant street party. A lot of these casinos have outdoor bars, so the liquor is readily accessible. So that can sometimes fuel the party, but we say it's like the people watching Capital of the World. I mean, that's part of the fun of coming down here. So that's how I describe it to people. It's a street party, a rather new addition. You didn't ask about this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, is the Slotzilla zip line. It's a 12-story zip line structure that looks like a slot machine, and it has added a new dimension to downtown, a new dimension to Fremont Street Experience. As people are walking along our pedestrian mall, they're looking up, and people are zipping and zooming over their heads, and it has been a huge success. People love it. It's a new draw for downtown, and we're very proud to have that as an attraction downtown.
Well, you know, my kids enjoyed this more than they did the Strip. When I took them down, my daughter turned 21, so it was the first shot, and she loved this. And it kind of almost seems to me like it's kind of a mixture of Times Square in New York and like New Orleans, you know, where you can walk around, like you say, you can have a drink in your hand, it's safe. And there's stuff to do if you like to gamble, there's all of that, but there's plenty of stuff for people that want to play. It just seems like a fun place, and it's kind of a carnival atmosphere.
It is. And really just beyond Fremont Street Experience itself, which is a street, it's a public street, there are a lot of new attractions beyond this one area. We, of course, love when people come down here, but there are things like the Ma Museum, which is two blocks away. There's the Neon Museum, which is the Neon Boneyard. It's amazing, all these old Las Vegas signs. There's a whole Fremont East District, which is a lot of bars and restaurants, really fun, very family-friendly area. So in combination, we think of ourselves as kind of a key part of that, but it's a lot of different businesses. It's a lot of different activities that people can do when they come to downtown Las Vegas. Ultimately, that's our goal. You know, 41 million people a year come to Las Vegas, and we want to get as many of those as we can to come downtown and see what's happening down here.
Well, and it's a great mix of the old and the new. You know, Scott, let's talk about what was happening downtown as the Strip got more and more attractive, you know, beyond, you know, the years of Sinatra, then into the Howard Hughes year and so forth. Downtown kind of started getting away from itself, and it was a place with kind of the old, really cheap hotels. And suddenly now, thanks in part to that light show, which is incredible, by the way. It's not people that hear light shows, you know, they have no idea until they see it how great it is. Was this a case of all these guys that have property here and stuff saying, what can we do? And we're going to compete not by trying to be exactly like the Strip, but being different.
There was a definite consideration for that. It was getting a little old and tired. The Strip, some of these mega resorts, there was just no way for downtown to compete. So there was a concerted effort to come up with something that would be an attraction. Interestingly, at one point, it was going to be a life-size version of the USS Enterprise. They were going to do an attraction that was a huge starship, and that was going to be the draw. At one point, they were talking about a parade in the sky down here on Fremont Street. It ended up being very much like the show in the sky at the Rio, which is now closed, but that was a popular attraction. Because this is outdoors, the equipment would have been exposed to the elements, so that didn't pan out. And then it was decided that this canopy, this lighted canopy with 2.5 million LED lights, would be a huge attraction, and it's turned out to be the case. It is eye-popping. It's the largest video screen in the world, and it's five blocks. And a lot of popular bands are featured. There's we have a new show by Tiesto, the EDM producer and superstar, really, in the EDM world. We have a new show that features his hit songs. We have another by Imagine Dragons, which is a hometown group. And so we try to continue to update those. And there are some old favorites that are, I shouldn't say old favorites, but they're classic bands, The Who and Heart and The Doors and Bon Jovi. Those folks all have shows as well. Just try to keep things interesting. Again, that's anybody can come down here and enjoy those light shows every hour. And as you said, when they come see the light shows, they tend to go in the casinos, which makes that makes our partner casinos very happy. So they're the ones who support this effort financially. They pay for the live entertainment. They pay for the light shows as well.
Well, everybody wants to see it. I know on your website, you can actually find who's going to be playing that particular hour. I'm a big Who fan, so the last time I was out here, wanted to go see The Who. The best part of it is, though, as incredible as the lights are, the sound is wonderful. You guys put a lot of thought into that. It wasn't just strictly the lights.
That's right. And you're the first to hear this, but we have just recently, I think this week, we're going to finish upgrading that sound system. We have, there are dozens and dozens of speakers along the length of the mall, and those have all been replaced with state-of-the-art, it's a state-of-the-art amplification system, and that sound is so crisp. We had a pretty good sound system before, yeah, but now it's unbelievably good. It's just this feeling as you're going along there. At one point, we did a test with some jets flying over, and it is a very realistic kind of a three-dimensional sound, and you saw everybody on the street duck because it was so realistic that those jets flying over, it really felt like there were jets flying very low. But that is a recent upgrade, and it's interesting because you wouldn't think people would tend to notice something like that. We think of it as more of a behind-the-scenes thing, but whenever I share anything in social media about the speakers and the sound system, it gets a huge number of shares, and I was always curious about what that was, and I think it's because it enhances the experience so much. Absolutely. It's the music that's playing as the ambient music. It just lends that feeling of it being a party, and that sound quality is really unmatched, and it's such sophisticated technology. I don't begin to understand it, but just a lot of not just the physical equipment, but the way it's positioned and sound technology has improved so much, and we're taking full advantage of it.
Well, what's incredible also is, you know, it's not like we're just blaring loud, but I remember here one time on a trip listening to Heart Barracuda, you know, and you're walking into a casino, not even really paying attention to it, and I'm ready to go, you know, and that's really cool. And it's got to make, like you say, the hotels with the casinos and so forth very happy.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because I'm sensitive to sound. So when I'm walking along, I want to be able to have a conversation. So there is a definite sweet spot of how do we fill up Fremont Street experience with sound, high quality sound, but not have it overwhelm the socializing that's going on, because that's such an important part. So it is. It gets a little louder by our stages. That live entertainment component is very important. But that ambient sound you're talking about on the street is it's a fine balance, and I think it's. When I walk through and I can have a conversation without shouting, I love that element of it.
You've also got, in addition to the sound there, a lot of live entertainment. Now, I know you have actual concerts, don't you, throughout the year with some pretty big names.
Yeah, our Rock of Vegas summer concert series, it is ending for this year. But it's we've had a number of big groups. Joan Jett kicked off our season. Huge crowds, 10 or 12,000 people on the street. They're completely free. I expect they'll be back next year. So folks can watch our website and we announce it, and it's advertised widely across the country. It's a huge draw. Melissa Etheridge and Three Doors Down and Vertical Horizon, these are all concerts, and they bring a lot of people downtown that might not otherwise come. And once they come down here, they see that they like it and they come back for the nightly entertainment. Our nightly entertainment is actually really kind of the best. These are the best bands in Las Vegas. These are a lot of them are cover bands, so people love when they can come down and they know all the words to the songs. I mean, that's a big selling point. It's not it's not sometimes the most edgy kind of indie bands, but these bands play and they're really talented. And sometimes we have tribute bands as well, which people love. So we'll have a Duran Duran tribute or any big band, and we've had a tribute band for them. People love it. So whether it's a concert or the nightly live music, you can't beat free, honestly.
Yeah, and, you know, it's great because you can go over there, you can stand and listen to somebody, like you said, cover band, you like it, you can spend as much or as little time as you want. And people like that kind of freedom where to go out, spend 10 minutes there, go back in, play a little. And it looks like here these restaurants have really come alive here. All of a sudden now there are places to go, again, where it's not just the cheap, you know, the 99-cent buffet that people got tired of. There's a lot happening now.
Yeah, I think although I think there's still a ton of value to be found, and especially in say our casinos downtown, they really cater to their players, and they want to make sure they're getting a huge value. But there's been a boom, especially in Fremont East, which for people not unfamiliar with the area, Fremont Street experiences that five blocks. As you walk past our Slotzilla attraction, there's a whole other area still on Fremont Street. There's no canopy overhead, but there's a row of restaurants and bars, and a lot of those have opened within the last two or three years.
More with Scott Robin and the Fremont Street Experience. In just a moment, we're going to talk about what's happening on Fremont Street East. This is Vegas Never Sleeps.
World-class hotels, dining, gaming, special events, and more. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Waste management has earth-friendly plans that fit the biggest corporations and recycling programs to help smaller companies get started. We're there for you every night and on the job with you every day. When you put waste management to work, you get an environmental partner and big ideas for every size business. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management. To learn more, visit WM.com.
You're listening to Scott Robin talking about the Fremont Street Experience. You know, Scott, one of the real joys of the old days of downtown was walking block to block.
You can still do that. A lot of great restaurants, and they're opening new restaurants and bars all the time. Fremont East is just offering a whole new array of you can go from the gourmet side to, you know, grab and go kind of dining, but it's the quality is going up. The prices are still great. And I'm a big fan of downtown because I'm kind of cheap, honestly. So I'm looking for that value too, like anybody else. I work down here. I need a place to go to lunch or dinner or have a drink or or more than one drink, and I want to know that I'm not paying $18 for a cocktail, honestly. So a lot of these places are very reasonable. It still has that downtown feel to it. Yeah. Every restaurant or bar you go into is going to have neon outside. I mean, there's it's kind of a more kind of, I think, grassroots kind of, it feels like a community down here. And if you're a regular at these places, they know your name. You know, it's a very different feel. You never feel like just a number, you know. So that's part of the appeal to me, too. But the food is really great. Not every one of them has succeeded, but the ones that have succeeded have really opened it up so much, you know, giving people many more options.
People that are staying in the Strip have to now plan at least a day to come down here and play around. And if people stay here, they can still easily drive down to the Strip. And, you know, this is a place, too, with some very nice hotels at a really reduced rate.
Yeah, those the rooms are really unbelievably inexpensive. I don't know how much competition it really is for the Strip, because it's a relatively small number of rooms. So just the sheer, you know, just the scope of the size of some of the resorts is not, it's a fraction of what the Strip has, where you have a hotel with 5,000 rooms or something. But yeah, I think there's enough room in a trip. If you're coming here for 3 days, a lot of people find a way to come downtown. It's just a different experience. It kind of augments a visit to the Strip as well. And some, you know, the Strip for some people is just not their thing. And for others, downtown's not their thing, and that's fine too. We're still talking about, you know, 12 or 13 million people a year finding their way downtown. You know, that's a good number of people, and we're always happy to have more. we're not at full capacity, so.
Well, absolutely. Now, you know, we have the Great Light Show. You talked about Slotzilla, which is the big thing. Everybody wants to see that, and it is something to really see. Is there anything in the plans that we could learn about here, maybe that's coming soon, maybe another attraction out here?
Well, there are always things in the works downtown. I mean, downtown is a kind of a microcosm of Las Vegas. You have to find new things, new attractions, new offerings that kind of pique the interest of whether someone's been to Vegas before. And a large number of people have never been to Vegas. I think in the last survey, it was like 16% of the people who come to Vegas had never been before. And this was in 2015. So that's an amazing statistic. And there is a factor of, if things are perceived as being stale, you just stop going. So there are always discussions about potential attractions. Slotzilla is doing gangbuster business. You know, even though it's been open for a year and a half or so, there's still a certain amount of awareness that's happening. And we just recently hit our 1 millionth flyer, which happened unbelievably quickly. But an attraction on the size and scope of Slotzilla seems unlikely, because that's quite an ordeal, because you are trying to build a structure. But I've heard a number of ideas being floated. The Las Vegas Club, which was a kind of a popular back in the day casino, was recently purchased and closed, and that whole block is now going to be a new resort. So it doesn't really count as an attraction, but for downtown and Fremont, that's a big deal that there's going to be a kind of big time resort being built all kind of from the ground up. So that's going to be getting a lot of buzz as well. But you never know. There's always a lot of very clever entrepreneurs. It's not all driven by the casinos. Quite often it can be, because obviously they it's in their best interest to keep people coming downtown. But a lot of times people just have a lot of very creative ideas, and everybody's excited. And it's kind of everybody, we figure it lifts all the boats. You know, if there's a new attraction like the Mob Museum, something like that, it's kind of a standalone attraction, but it helps everybody around there, the hotels, casinos, restaurants. So you just never know.
We will wrap up our look at downtown Las Vegas and the changes there in just a few moments. This is Vegas Never Sleeps.
Visit us at VegasNeverSleeps.com. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
I'm here with Logan Reed, my own personal business coach, and part of this is just getting rid of some of the fears that really stop us from accomplishing the things we want to in our lives.
Yes, so we all have our fears and the places where we get stopped in our life. So I always say that coaching is about moving forward at the places where we would normally get stopped. We all get scared, we all get stopped, and when we can keep moving forward, that's when we create things that we would have never thought possible.
So how do we get involved?
Email me at Logan@LoganReedCoaching.com. And you could also check out my website if you want to learn more about me at LoganReedCoaching.com.
You're listening to Scott Robin talk about the new vibe in downtown Las Vegas that really makes it more attractive now to visitors. Everybody wants to see the Fremont Street Experience if they haven't yet, or if they just haven't seen it in a while, it's always changing. How can they find out, you know, like what song's playing when and all that? Where do we go?
I always tell people to go to our website, VegasExperience.com. I take care of that personally, so I can assure that everything is posted in a relatively timely manner. We tend to know our schedule the month prior to things happening. Some of the bigger events we obviously know months ahead. New Year's Eve is going to be a huge one for us. But if you want to know the nightly entertainment, if you want to get a ticket to Slotzilla, if you want to know when the light shows are happening, that's the best place to go. There's a calendar section. You can get a lot more information about. We have a blog that talks about current events and kind of just ideas for things to do down here. But the calendar, one of the most important and popular parts of our site at VegasExperience.com, because that's what people want to know. They're here in town, and we want to make it easy for them to find their favorite band or a band they think they would like or a band that's featured on the VivaVision canopy as well.
Well, Las Vegas is not all about gaming, dining, and entertainment. There's also culture and history. I'm at the National Atomic Testing Museum. It's an incredible place. And with us is the executive director, Michael Hall. Now, Michael, this place is incredible. But before we get into what people can see here and so forth, I know you just joined the museum, but this is something you do, right? I mean, this museum is incredible. It's a Smithsonian level type of museum. Where did you come from?
Most recently, I came from a position in Florida. I was down there for 12 years and managed two different museums. I've been managing museums for 30 years, but it's a tremendous pleasure to come here to Las Vegas and be associated with this Smithsonian-affiliated museum.
Well, yeah, and that's really the exciting thing. And this is, a 21st century museum where there's everything here. Just walking around the facility, the sounds, the sights, and this really covers the entire thing, right, from the thought of an atomic weapon all the way till today.
It does, and there's a tremendous sense of passion for this museum because the people who founded it and are still on the board and are, you know, stakeholders, they worked at the test site and they were involved with nuclear testing. And, you know, they were scientists and physicists, and they have a real passion not only for the science but the history of the Cold War and the patriotism that they put forth and served during the war, both men and women.
Well, yeah, and as you say, you know, we were talking before, and we were mentioning that old documentary, Atomic Cafe, and that really had a point of view and so forth. This is a little different, right? I mean, what do you want people to come away from after they visit the museum?
Well, we are stressing a historical timeline, and we don't, you know, nobody takes the position on nuclear weapons. Nobody likes them, but they were a fact of history, and they were a big component of the Cold War period because we were in another arms race during that period, and nuclear weapons for us and the Soviets became a sense of deterrent. It can be well argued that nuclear weapons actually prevented a world war.
Now, you talk about specifically what happened here in Nevada. They tested these things. Tell us a little. I mean, I know in the 1950s and I guess early 60s, it was quite an event. I mean, people looked at it a little differently. On the one hand, they were afraid of these things. But on the other hand, it was something to see the night light up into day.
That's very true. And there were two distinctive phases of atomic testing here in Nevada. The first phase was from 1951 to 1963. That was the above ground test. They were actually 100 tests done at the Nevada test site, and they actually became so popular that at the time, the Atomic Energy Commission actually would advertise in advance when they were doing a test just to promote tourism to Las Vegas.
Well, one of the things I love about the museum is you really get the popular culture throughout this entire area. And I mean, you have one exhibit that talks about there was atomic cocktails and stuff. The people were really kind of caught up with this because I guess we didn't know what was going to happen with this, but it wasn't just a weapon too. The whole idea of an atomic age had some positives too.
It really became part of our culture, a part of world culture. It's amazing how many foreign visitors we get that are amazed with the pop culture aspect. In fact, I've had a number of film crews from France and Europe that have come just to film that small little exhibit on pop culture we have. It was very prolific at the time and circulated all over the world.
Well, and that seems like something that the museum tries to do, because it's not just for people that love science, although there's plenty of science here. It's not just popular culture, history, and so forth. It really has every aspect. And I guess, do you find that a lot of the visitors have their particular favorite areas that they like to hang out in, that kind of thing?
There are many interesting exhibits here, including our Area 51 exhibit. Now, that eventually will be changed out for a new exhibit. We're going to retain the Area 51 nomenclature, the exhibit itself, within the museum long term. But we are really trying to address a new generation, do new and upgraded exhibits that will talk to a new generation that really is not familiar with this history, but we hope that they realize how important it is to our American history.
Well, and again, we mentioned Smithsonian, and one thing I like about that is these are really interactive. It's not like you just go by and see a bunch of pictures with a written description. You know, there's sights, there's sounds, and I guess that's something, you know, as a director, you're always looking for the latest technology to try to make this as stimulating as it can for people to visit.
We have a lot of interactive things, and we have a really interesting video that plays midway through your experience called the Ground Zero Theater, where you sit for 15 minutes and you actually witness and kind of feel what it's like, what it would have been like to sit and actually sit outdoors and observe one of these nuclear tests. And there actually were, for years, an area where VIP visitors were brought to the test site where they could observe the nuclear test.
Well, is there any stuff, on radiation and that kind of fear, especially as time went on?
We're actually going to open a new exhibit probably within the next 6 months called Exposure, and it in particular will address the issues of radiation. People don't realize, but radiation just doesn't come from nuclear weapons. You can go outside and you receive radiation from the sun. There's many natural forms of radiation, and it just depends on your amount of exposure, whether it is good or bad. I mean, even eating a banana, you get a small amount of radiation. Radiation is all around us.
Some of the folks that were involved in this thing back in those days come by and visit. I mean, is this something, do you enjoy having them here, and do they get kind of a kick out of see how you've recreated this entire era of ours?
Absolutely, and that goes to the passion I spoke of that really is inherent in this place. We have actually many tour guides and helpers, volunteers at our museum that actually worked at the test sites. Some of them worked at Area 51, and they have wonderful stories that the visitors enjoy. And what a lot of people don't realize is the test site was not just about, you know, testing nuclear weapons. It brought a lot of jobs to Las Vegas that helped build infrastructures and schools and sewers and things that allowed Las Vegas to grow and be acceptable to the bigger casinos that came later. And today there's a great deal of retired individuals in this community that are former employees of the test site. And we're into second, third generation professional people now working in Las Vegas who attribute, their reason for being here because their father or mother or their grandmother had brought, the family here years ago when the test site was so active.
Let's talk about the test site itself. Now, that wasn't actually in Las Vegas. It was out in a town called Mercury, Nevada, I understand. That's how far from here, and did people commute in, or was... I understand at one time there was quite a few employees. There's not anything out there now, though.
Well, the test site is still in operation. It's a smaller operation. They do subcritical tests. They do emergency management training out there. They do a lot of very important things, important to national defense. However, the test site first opened in 1951. It was part of the original World War II era Nevada bombing range, bombing and gunnery range, and it was about 1,300 square miles that were carved out for nuclear testing starting in 1951. Now, initially, it was just selected here because it was a close flight from Los Alamos. They had their own runway out there. They didn't think they would even need to even use Las Vegas because Las Vegas was a very small town at the time, and it was 60 miles away. However, they realized in short order that it took a lot of logistical support to set off nuclear weapons, and they hired a small construction firm called EG&G. It had 50 employees in 1952. 3 years later, it had 50,000 employees. Again, Las Vegas, that was the founding of what is modern-day Las Vegas, because they found Las Vegas the ideal base for laboratories and housing, and of course, the families came here. They needed schools, and it over the years, it really led to an infrastructure improvement and growth of Las Vegas.
This year, more than 172,000 people will be told they have lung cancer. 60% will wonder why, as they never smoked or quit smoking years ago. Lung cancer will kill 163,000 people this year, more people than breast, prostate, colon, liver, and kidney cancers combined, making it by far America's number one cancer killer. But there is hope. New treatments are available and more are on the way. The Lung Cancer Alliance is working to focus attention and research on lung cancer to develop early detection tools and more treatment options. Lung Cancer Alliance is leading the charge as the only organization solely dedicated to providing support, resources, and a voice for people touched by lung cancer and those at risk for the disease. Join us in the fight against lung cancer. The time has come. No more excuses. No more lung cancer. To learn more, visit lungcanceralliance.org or call 1-800-298-2436.
You'd never suspect that you could find natural beauty as part of a working landfill. You can. Today, waste management landfills provide more than 17,000 acres of protected land for wildlife habitats. Working closely with communities and the Wildlife Habitat Council, we can ensure there will be protected space for native animal and plant life to thrive. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
Is there something you've always wanted to know about Las Vegas? Drop us a line at info@vegasneversleeps.com. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
You're listening to Dr. Michael Hall of the Atomic Museum in Las Vegas, and we've been talking about the variety of areas that the museum covers regarding the atomic blasts. So really, then, it was part of the whole Las Vegas growth when you come to think of it. Sure, there was gambling and entertainment and so forth, but this was just another thing that brought more people in and more people that actually lived here.
Absolutely. And as I said, the test site is still in operation. They employ, I think, about 1,000 people today. It's never really gone out of service, even though atomic testing ended in 1992-93 time period.
Well, talk a little about Mercury, Nevada, because I drove through there several years ago, you know, and there wasn't much there. There was a few little spots, and that was it. Is that was it at one time more of a thriving area itself, just the city?
Mercury was originally established in the 1950s to support the test site. It was a government housing barracks, a very simple area, and it has always been basically controlled by originally the Atomic Energy Commission, and then which evolved into the Department of Energy today, that's in charge of, you know, nuclear issues. But it's a secure site. It's not really open to the public. However, having said that, they do tours today of the test site. I've been on tours. I've been through Mercury. You know, it has support organizations for the science that is going on out there. At one time, there was a famous little steakhouse out there that served all the original people there for years and years. A lot of people talk of that very fondly because there was not much between Mercury and Nevada. It was basically about a 60-mile drive on a very narrow road at the time. But gradually, as I said, they realized they needed a base of support. Las Vegas became that base of support. And as more and more logistics came, people, employees, they were based in Las Vegas, and they would be bussed out every day. They would also be flown out at times. There was different ways of, you know, transporting them to Mercury, which was kind of the entryway into the test site.
Now, we also talked earlier about one of the features is Area 51. People love that kind of stuff. There's a lot of interest in that. Tell them what they'll see here about Area 51. And I guess that's one of those areas, too, where there's always going to be conspiracy theorists and so forth that think all these things are going on. And obviously, you don't play into that, but really talk about what all transpired there.
Well, our permanent exhibit that we evolved from this temporary Area 51 exhibit will talk about the documented history. I mean, there are the famous spy planes, the U-2, the SR-71 were developed there under the famous engineer Kelly Johnson. That's really remarkable and amazing history. We do address in our current exhibit, you know, the myth and the reality, and there's some interesting stories, and that's always fun to talk about. There's a lot of stories out here. Again, we're not here to pass an opinion, but to just document things and convey this to the public. But it's a very popular exhibit.
And I know throughout the years things change. You have different events. Do you have anything coming up in the near future that people can look for?
We have events programming every month. We have a wonderful education director here, Joe Kent, who has installed a movie series approximately every month. We show a free movie for our members. We also have a speaker series that takes place at least once a month. We do a number of children's programming events through the year. We're actually we have something in early summer every year. So there's many things. So I encourage you to visit our website and consult our calendar, because we always have active things, and most of them are free to the public.
Well, let's talk about that. First of all, your location, a great one, because it's not far off from the Strip and that kind of thing. It's a pretty easy drive, and there is parking here, which is really advantageous in this town.
There's good parking, and I'm surprised how many people actually walk down here from the Strip. Not that bad of a walk, maybe not in this summer heat, but we have a lot of out-of-town visitors, which we welcome, and a lot of local visitors. And as you saw today when you toured our museum, we have a lot of school groups that come through, and that's a big focus to us is education and providing a story to the many school groups that visit us.
Well, Michael, we'll be coming back as the years go on, but for now, if people want to find out more about the museum, let's tell them where to go on the web. What do they look for?
If you just type in National Atomic Testing Museum, you can Google it right to the web.
And your hours, when can people come and visit?
We are open every day from 10. You want to get here by 5 to see the museum. On Sunday, it's 12 to 5.
Thanks, Michael. Really appreciate your time. And this is just a wonderful place. We'll be out to see it. Finally, we're presenting a regular feature now from the Casino Hall of Fame. I think you're really going to enjoy it. It celebrates the folks that really made Las Vegas what it is today. So let's meet the man behind the Hall of Fame right now. We're lucky to be talking with Stephen Cutler today. First of all, Stephen, where did you get the idea of this? Because it's just such an incredible piece. And talk, if you would, a little about the collection that backs up this Hall of Fame.
Well, actually, I've been in Las Vegas since 1953. And I'm a veteran of the gaming industry myself. As a matter of fact, from the time I was 21 years old, I started out as a dealer in downtown Las Vegas at the El Cortez, working for a whopping $12 a day. And I didn't get tips, incidentally. That was it, 12 bucks a day. Anyways, I've always collected stuff. My family always collected items, and I started collecting from the day I got into the gaming industry. So I kind of inherited their stuff, and I was picking stuff up when everybody was throwing stuff away. I was grabbing it when people were moving and whatever. And I put this incredible collection together.
It is an absolutely incredible collection. We'll go through some of the things in here. I mean, there's really not enough time to get into all the stuff because there's just so much of it. But when did you get the idea that, you know, having spent that time in the business and so forth, okay, we have to get all this together and tell the story of this place?
Well, in 1994, I quit my final job in the gaming industry at the Desert Inn, and I decided to get my collection and create an attraction out of my collection and something that would truly tell the story of Las Vegas, which to me is the most iconic city in the world. Anyways, it kind of morphed over a two-year period into the Casino Legends Hall of Fame. I was fortunate enough to be able to partner up with the Tropicana Hotel and actually put a physical display in the Tropicana. It was only intended to be there 1 year. It turned out to be almost 8 years, and during that eight-year period, we inducted about 90 people into the Hall of Fame. We had major ceremonies. We used the Tiffany Theater where the Follies Bergère was held. We used the full orchestra, and it was standing room only. We'd have everybody in the audience from Jerry Lewis to the governor and everybody in between, past inductees, future inductees. It was the event and the hot ticket to get. And incidentally, you couldn't buy a ticket. It was invited guests only.
Thanks for being with us this week. We'll see you next week. This is Stephen Maggi with Vegas Never Sleeps.
We'll see you next week for more excitement and energy from the desert. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.